Listen, my sons, to a father's instruction. Pay attention and gain understanding. I give you sound learning, so do not forsake my teaching. When I was a boy in my father's house, still tender and only a child of my mother, he taught me and said, lay hold of my words with all your heart. Keep my commands and you will live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Do not forget my words or swerve from them. Do not forsake wisdom and she will protect you. Love her and she will watch over you. Wisdom is supreme. Therefore, get wisdom. Though it costs all you have, get understanding. Esteem her and she will exalt you. Embrace her and she will honor you. She will set a garland of grace on your head and present you with a crown of splendor. Listen, my son, accept what I say, and the years of your life will be many. I guide you in the way of wisdom and lead you along straight paths. When you walk, your steps will not be hampered. When you run, you will not stumble. Hold on to instruction. Do not let it go. Guard it well, for it is your life.
A man by the name of Lot had come a long ways. He'd been blessed by God materially and physically. He came to a point in his life where he and his uncle Abraham had to make some choices. They had become so wealthy, their herds so large, they couldn't graze together anymore. And so Uncle Abraham gave Lot a choice of the area of land that he would like to move into. And so Lot made a choice. He saw down in a valley a very fertile area. Maybe it reminded him of home back in Haran. Maybe it was just the attractiveness of not only fertile lands where his cattle and sheep could graze, but maybe also because it had two prominent cities among many others. The cities were named Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot made the choice to take his herds, his workers, his family, and move down into that area. Later on, we read about God looking down upon that valley, those cities, and particularly those two prominent cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, and becoming so distressed by what he saw that he decided he would do something he had not done since the time of Noah. He would destroy an area of land, everything on it, the people, everything. But he sent a couple of messengers down to a city, the city of Sodom, to speak to Lot and to Lot's family, to rescue them from the coming destruction. And so it was that Lot gathered his wife and his two daughters, who were engaged at that time, we read, and they fled up to a mountain area that was just above that area. Of course, we know the story about Lot's wife. She did what she was forbidden to do. She turned back and looked back upon Sodom. We can only imagine, had we been her, that we might have done the same thing. After all, imagine yourself living in Ventura or somewhere in this large plain. And it had become so evil that God had sent messengers to say, I'm going to destroy it. But this is where you're born. This is where you're raised. This is where your family is. This is where your friends are. This is the life that you know. This is what you like. I mean, it's a paradise in so many ways. You know, we pay for the privilege of living here, don't we? And so it's not surprising that Lot's wife had the same feelings about that place called Sodom. It was her home. It was all she knew. If Lot was a wealthy man, as we understand him to be, probably had a very nice home and very nice furnishings, and we don't know what kind of wealth he had materially besides the herds that he had. But it must have been tough to leave. Well, we know that she turned around and looked back upon the city, and God turned her into a pillar of salt. Sounds something outrageous, doesn't it? And yet we know that God has done outrageous things from the very beginning, because God did the outrageous thing of creating the universe. But then more outrageous things happened. Oh, they weren't quite like turning someone into a pillar of salt. But we read that Lot and his daughters escaped. But then his daughters decided that they wanted what every other woman of that era and of that culture wanted. They wanted to have children. But there were no men about. They were out here all by themselves somehow. And so they decided to do the despicable thing. They got their father drunk, and each of them became pregnant by their father. The Bible tells us that their children and the nation of people that grew from those two children became two of the nation of Israel's greatest ongoing enemies. And you have to wonder, how did this man Lot, who had been so influenced, it would seem, by his uncle Abraham, this godly man, raise up these two daughters whose values were not at all with God, but with culture? And who would not think twice about doing such a horrible thing? Later on, we read about another man, name of Jacob. Now, Jacob wasn't perfect by a long shot, but he seemed to have an affinity with God. He seemed to want to follow God, and he called upon God, and he believed that God would and did bless him in many occasions, and so Scripture teaches us. And of course, we know that he ended up having 12 sons, and we know that those sons, because they had four different mothers amongst them, found themselves quarreling periodically, and particularly quarreling or at least envious, jealous of one of their brothers by the name of Joseph. So much so that when they had the opportunity, they sold him off to a caravan of slave traders, and he ended up in Egypt as a slave in a house of a man named Potiphar. And Potiphar saw Lot in Joseph, a young man, probably only in his late teens at best. And Joseph was such a diligent man, young man who saw that he needed to turn, as we might say, lemons into lemonade. A terrible situation of going from being the son of a wealthy, prosperous, and prominent man to being a slave. And so it was that Joseph became the head servant in the household of Potiphar. Everything was under his control. He was second only to Potiphar himself. And he was terribly responsible. And he found himself being sexually tempted by Potiphar's wife, and his first response was that this was an ungodly thing that he was being called to do. Here's a man who's far away from the land of God, it seems, at least the way they thought about it, but God was not far away from him, not ever. Not in his thoughts, not in his presence. And that rejection caused him to end up in prison because of lies, and even there in prison, he becomes the chief prisoner trusted by the chief guard. I don't know exactly how that all worked within that system, and doesn't parallel at all to our systems today, it seems like. And yet, he became highly respected because, once again, he was very diligent. He used his abilities. He was committed to God. He was honorable in all that he did. He was trustworthy. And so we know how the story proceeds, that Joseph, by the hand of God, by the blessing of God, by the power of God, rises out of that prison to become governor of all Egypt, in charge of all of the agriculture and its care within all of Egypt, so much so that when famine hits, Joseph's own family, his brother, his father, end up coming down to Egypt, and Joseph treats them all in a way that belies his commitment to God and his character shaped by God. And his children become blessed amongst his people, not just immediately or in the short term, but on down through generations. You know, these are just two examples of people that we read about in the Bible that have to cause us to wonder about family and about choices families make and about values families have. Bryn Clements has been leading us through a brilliant study of 1 and 2 Samuel that so highlights family and choices people make, the values that they had, their relationship to God or not, and the consequences of it. And we read story after story after story that keeps coming back to family and to choices and to values and a relationship with God. It poses some questions for us. These are questions that with each generation we have to ask and we have to answer. How do we become responsible adults responsible husbands and wives, responsible fathers and mothers. How does that happen? Do we learn it from books or films or TV? Do we learn it from friends or experience? Or do we just along the way kind of figure it out? Do we learn it by what we just happen to notice in the lives of our parents? Well, all of those contribute to shaping us into responsible adults, or not, depending upon just what those learnings and examples are. But the best training we can have comes from our families when they're God-centered families. Amen? Thank you. It's okay. God in His Word charged parents to instruct, to train, and to model their children to be mature. And the New Testament takes it a step further to charge them to cause their children to be Christ-like adults who are ready to be Christ-like husbands and wives, fathers and mothers. And that, I would charge you, is a specific difference, a significant difference, rather than just to be what the culture would consider to be a mature husband or wife, father or mother, to be a Christ-like husband or father, mother or wife. Children learn what they are taught, whether correctly or incorrectly taught. A famous scholar wrote this: "From the day your baby is born, you must teach him to do things. Children today love luxury too much. They have detestable manners, flout authority, and have no respect for their elders. They no longer rise when their parents or teachers enter the room. What kind of awful creatures will they be when they grow up?" Well, those concerns were voiced by a fellow who lived about 400 years before Christ by the name of Socrates. I guess, as someone has said, things just don't change. These are not connected to a time or a place or a specific social condition, then, are they? Instead, they represent the nature of human beings who must be civilized. Responsible parenting intentionally matures children. I want to say that again. Responsible parenting intentionally matures children. In the Old Testament as well as in the New Testament, God charged fathers with responsible parenting. Fathers in particular were given the charge. Oh, certainly mothers had a very large and significant role, but a father was to be the spiritual head of his family, and whatever and what all happened within that family was to flow from him. He was in charge. He had that responsibility. Deuteronomy chapter 11 and verses 18 through 21 calls for God-focused fathers to intentionally impress God's will upon their children from the time they awoke in the morning until they went to bed at night. Children must understand godliness not just as their religion, but as their life. Children who practice these things would become responsible, godly adults. And so here in Deuteronomy 11, and in verses 18 on through 21, these children of Israel, the people of God, are charged to fix these words of mine, the words of God, in your hearts and minds. Tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads. Teach them to your children, talking about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road, when you lie down and when you get up. Write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates, so that the days of your life, the days of your children, may be many in the land the Lord swore to give your forefathers, as many as the days that the heavens are above the earth. This is a blessing that God would give if His people would instill in their children, through constant teaching and training and modeling, that God was to be forefront in their minds. Proverbs chapters 1 through 9 records Solomon, King Solomon, instructing his son in godly wisdom and conduct. Solomon centered on three things that he emphasized and repeated over and over. Wisdom's matchless value, warnings to avoid evil men, and warnings to avoid immoral women. It strikes me as kind of interesting that there didn't seem to be any wicked women and immoral men, but that at least was the tack that Solomon was taking, perhaps because he was speaking to a son rather than to a daughter. In Proverbs chapter 2, in verses 1 through 19, we find these three themes captured in their essence for us to really think about, and for fathers to think about in terms of duplicating these things in their lives as they go about teaching. So Solomon says, "My son, if you accept my words and store my commands within you, turning your ear to wisdom and applying your heart to understanding, and if you call out for insight and cry aloud for understanding, and if you look for it as for silver and search for it as for hidden treasure, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom, and from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. He holds victory in store for the upright. He is a shield to those whose walk is blameless, for he guards the course of the just and protects the way of his faithful ones. Then you will understand what is right and just and fair, every good path, for wisdom will enter your heart, and knowledge will be pleasant to your soul. Discretion will protect you, and understanding will guard you. Wisdom will save you from the ways of wicked men, from men whose words are perverse, who leave the straight paths, who walk in darkness, who delight in doing wrong and rejoice in the perverseness of evil, whose paths are crooked and whose ways are devious. It will save you also from the adulteress, from the wayward wife with her seductive words, who has left the partner of her youth and ignored the covenant she made before God. For her house leads down to death, and her paths to the spirits of the dead. None who go to her return or attain the paths of life." Solomon says these things over and over as he's speaking to his son, trying to instruct and train his son, because these three things were paramount for him to know, to really know, not just to hear, but to know at the depths of his soul as being important for quality of life as an adult, as a mature one. God calls for children to honor their parents, and I would like to think that Solomon's sons did that, but we seem to wonder as the story goes on after his death. But God long ago had called for his people to honor their parents. Have you ever wondered why? Why is that one of the Ten Commandments that God gave there in Exodus 20? Among the many things that he could have said, why that? Let me suggest a couple of things. If our parents love us as they should, then we should love and obey or honor them in every way. Our love for our parents should cause us to see them as the foundation for society and for us within our society. Parents should live intentionally and conscientiously as examples of responsible adulthood, and particularly of responsible, godlike adulthood in character. Basketball great Michael Jordan once said, "My heroes were and are my parents." It wasn't that the rest of the world would necessarily think that they were heroic, but now listen. "But they were the adults I saw constantly, and I admired what I saw." That phrase, "they were the adults I saw constantly," is vital. Children, even as adults, repeat what they see and what they hear from their parents, even if they don't like it, because it's what they constantly saw and heard. How many of us, boy, if I could ask for hands, how many of us when we were teenagers said, "When I become an adult and a parent, I'm not going to parent my kids that way." Yeah. And yet what's our first reaction when we have kids? Exactly the way our parents raised us. And we grit our teeth and we groan and we say, oh, I did the very thing I said I'd never do. Because that was what we constantly saw and heard, wasn't it? Doesn't make it right or wrong. It just is. So our modeling as parents has much to do with the success of our children's marriages and their parenting efforts. Their homes will reflect our homes. I don't know about you, but that's kind of a scary thought to me. At the very least, sobering. In Christian families, wives are to respect their husbands, and husbands are to love their wives. And this comes from self-discipline and unselfishness. If husbands are to be respected by their wives, then husbands must be respectable, able to be respected by their wives. If wives are to be loved by their husbands, then wives must be lovable, able to be loved by their husbands. For their children, this powerfully models responsible, godly adulthood. And it's the basis for a functional family. So important is family teaching and training that a minister named Titus was told by his mentor, a minister named Paul, in Titus chapter 1, and in verses, or chapter 2 rather, in verses 1 through 8, you must teach what is in accord with sound doctrine. Teach the older men to be temperate, worthy of respect, self-controlled, and sound in faith, in love, and endurance. Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can train the younger women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled and pure, to be busy at home, to be kind, and to be subject to their husbands, so that no one will malign the word of God. Similarly, encourage the young men to be self-controlled. In everything, set them an example by doing what is good. In your teaching, show integrity, seriousness, and soundness of speech that cannot be condemned, so that those who oppose you may be ashamed because they have nothing bad to say about us. Did you notice that self-control and being worthy of respect were to be part of each person's life, whether old or younger, male or female, husband, wife, father or mother? These are necessary traits of responsible, godly adulthood. What else should we be teaching our children besides these things? What should we be training them to be and to do? Let me suggest that we must teach them and they must understand godly and ungodly morals and ethics. Apparently, Lot's daughters were not taught that. It didn't really set with them. It wasn't part of their thinking. We must train them in patience, in godly values, in responsibility, in hard work, in thoughtfulness, and in forgiveness. We must teach them by our words and our examples how to be good husbands and wives, good sons and daughters, good fathers and mothers. A person must be devoted to growing in each of these if they are to be mature enough to be ready for marriage. When fellow Christians haven't had this kind of teaching and training, we who are older and who have achieved a certain level of maturity at least are responsible for modeling and teaching and training them in God's will for marriage and family. We become, if you will, surrogate parents to them spiritually speaking. At the same time, Jesus' follower Paul encouraged his young Christian friend Timothy to train himself to be godly. It is not simply the responsibility of others to train us in these things. We bear responsibility as well, because that's part of being a mature adult. After instructing his son in godly living, back in Proverbs 2, Solomon said in verses 20 through 22, if you do these things, if you take this business of wisdom seriously, if you search for it with all your might as though it were the most valuable thing on earth, because it is, if you avoid both wicked men and adulterous women, you will walk in the ways of good men and keep to the paths of the righteous. For the upright will live in the land, and the blameless will remain in it. But the wicked will be cut off from the land, and the unfaithful will be torn from it. God promises to take care of us if we take our attention to Him. If we listen carefully and follow carefully, intentionally and consistently, constantly looking at His Word and putting it in our hearts as something that is a part of us so that we become a part of Him, then we'll be blessed by Him. One writer has commented, "Truly, our homes need to be saved. They need to be happy. They deserve to be productive of goodness and the powerful protectors of manly virtue and womanly purity. They need to be schools where the pliable minds and tender hearts of impressionable youth can be trained for the good life here and the home of immortal souls in the hereafter. Enshrining the abiding presence of Jesus Christ in the heart of each family member is the only way that our homes can be what Jehovah intended them to be. Constantly training our children in godliness draws them and us closer to God. It develops spiritual maturity, and it prepares our children for life's responsibilities. If you've not been regularly teaching and training in these matters, I would encourage you, whether parent or grandparent, to start now and make it a daily practice. Make it an intentional practice, not by forcing it down their throats, but enjoy sharing with them the blessings that come when we give our lives to God and to His will for our lives. If you know an adult Christian who missed this in their home, whether they're barely an adult, maybe they're just at the end of their teen years, please take them on. Mentor them in godliness. Mentor them in what it means to be growing into a mature Christian adult. Mentor them in what it means to be a godly husband or wife, father or mother. Folks, I cannot emphasize enough how desperately our society and even the church today needs this. We see so many young people delaying marriage because they know they're too immature for it. We see so many young people getting married and being scared to death because they don't want their marriage to be what their parents' marriage was. And so many times what their parents' marriage was divorce. They've seen nothing but dysfunctional families in every sense of that. They've survived somehow and they want the best. They really want to have a functional family, a functional marriage. They want their kids and their life and their family to be totally different than what theirs was as they were growing up. But they have no model. And they've had no teaching and no training in godly marriages, in godly families. And so many of them end up, as a result of that, going through the very same process that was modeled for them. Ending up divorced, unhappy, damaged children, damaged lives. We can short-circuit that if we'll but follow God's will. So I charge you, whatever your circumstances today, if you're a Christian, put God's will to work in your families. God has taught and trained and modeled all of these things. He's done this so that we would not destroy our marriages and our families and ourselves in the process. When we humble ourselves to His wisdom in these things, we save all the people that we love from experiencing these things. If we don't, we're lost. If you haven't humbled yourself to God to follow His will in all things in your life, I urge you Take that step now as a way of life that you pursue the rest of your life. However we can help you, we urge you to come forward right now as we stand and sing this song.